ESAM's Global Economy Podcast. My name is Fredrik Eriksson, and today I'm speaking to Hanna Norberg. Hanna Norberg is an economist and advisor in the field of trade and trade policy and has authored many economic analyses of trade agreements. She has a doctorate in international economics from the University of Lund and, among other things, now runs Trade Economista. Hanna has lately been involved in projects that look at the use of technology in trade and recently released a new paper about how blockchain can help to unleash more trade and reduce trade costs. And this is also the subject of our conversation. Hanna, welcome to ESAB's Global Economy Podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here, Fredrik.
Well, that's great. So let's start to talk about your new paper, your recent work on blockchain. I think for a lot of people, the public face of blockchain is going to be Bitcoin, right? So why are you writing a paper about trade and Bitcoins?
Good question. That's a good question that I get all the time. In the general public, people are usually seeing Bitcoin and blockchain as the same thing. Blockchain is the underlying technology, and Bitcoin is one application. So if you think about it like really early email and the internet, then Bitcoin is one application, sort of when you had email that you could only send email within the same system, like I think America Online. And then you have blockchain, which is the whole internet. And so it emerged already in 91 as a way to timestamp digital documents and to decentralize databases, but it became famous with Bitcoin in the past couple of years. And it was used to enable transactions without centralized middlemen, such as a bank or a financial institution, for Bitcoin to change hands. And it was developed for people who didn't necessarily know or trust each other to have transactions. And if you think about the trade chain, so if you think about something that goes all the way from farm to fork, and you look into that, there are a number of transactions going along that way within people who don't necessarily know or trust each other. So the fit is actually perfect.
And what is it then that blockchain technology actually can do in that sort of trade chain from farm to fork? What is it specifically that blockchain can help traders with?
Yeah, see, what it does is that it keeps a ledger of information. So for now, if you think about the containerization, for example, by some measures that lowered transport costs. So the cost of actually transporting one thing from A to B by up to 90%, which is huge and is bigger than anything that trade policy can dream of doing, right? But we still, as we transport things, we don't only transport the good, but we're also having to keep information on there. And having that information is actually very costly. So a couple of years ago, I interviewed Maersk, you know, the big global shipper. They had this project of looking into how much it costs to have the paperwork follow an avocado that went from Mombasa to Rotterdam. And when I was there interviewing them, the study wasn't done yet, so I don't have the actual numbers. But at the point, the paperwork, just having the administrative work that went into that process, was at that time estimated to be three times as big as the actual cost of transportation. So anything that has to do with keeping documentation and keeping information about the good along the way is a very costly process. And by having blockchain incorporated, we can lower these costs a lot.
So what you were just saying, Hanna, is I think I have an example which may reflect what you're talking about. So I was going to be handed a delivery the other week, and the delivery firm say they had delivered this package on my doorstep, but I couldn't find any package on the doorstep. And when we're trying to figure out where the package was and who had signed it off, we couldn't find any information at all on who had delivered the package to my door, who had signed it off, let alone where the package actually was right now. So what you're talking about now with blockchain technology in the transport chain, is this sort of relevant to this example that you provide more transparency, which enables everyone to basically get an exact, precise information about where a package or where a good is right now, controlled by whom?
That's one piece, but it's a very small piece. I mean, in your case, it would be very useful, right? And it would build on, see, blockchain uses consensus. So only when everyone on the chain, everyone on the node has says, yes, we have information that Frederick's package has been delivered and Frederick has said that he has received it, only then will the information go in as finished. So that's one way. But if you think about it, the chain is a lot longer. So for now, with the risk of theft, you know, sort of taking your problem, but taking it a little further back in the chain. So for now, when we look at shipping, for example, for the risk of theft and fraud and so on, things are usually shipped in a closed container as a black box. But with having blockchain here and some smart sensors on it, you can follow your shipment all the way, right? So you'll know the latitude, the longitude, but you also know the temperature and the humidity and so on, right? So that's what it's useful for there. But there are also all these cases where we don't really think about it, like right now. So for example, within their own ecosystem, the boss of Walmart who does blockchain, he came in one day to a meeting with a box of diced mango that he had taken off the shelves. And he went into the meeting saying, in case we had a reason to look back at where this mango came from, food poisoning, whatever, how long would it take us to find it within their own ecosystem? It turned out it would take close to a week, 6 days, 18 hours or something. And then they put that whole system on blockchain and that time went down to literally 2 seconds. So it's about having the information that we have available, but have it faster. But also, there is this whole new level, this whole new layer of transparency and information that we don't think about right now. So as consumers, when we go into the store or when we order something online, basically there's this information asymmetry. So as consumer, most of what we know about the product comes down to the price. If you go to your grocery store to pick up an apple, there might be a sign that says this apple is from Argentina or such. So you might know the country and you might may or may not know if, you know, they're organic. And then the price, but that's it. But this way, you can find out anything about your apple with a smartphone and a QR sticker. So if they have this information on the apple by a QR sticker, you can follow it all the way back to the seed, basically, within 2 seconds, which empowers the consumer in a brand new way, right? So you would know if there had been, if it was sustainable, if it was fair trade, if it was organic. And usually now we have these middlemen that say this apple is organic, which means that it has passed through the producer who's certified to be organic, an organic grower. But we don't know anything about specifically about that apple. But here the information follows the actual product instead.
All right. I mean, that's pretty interesting because then we're talking about not just the technology that is going to have hopefully a very strong positive effect on the sort of production side or the sort of the either the people that produces or the people that transports and the people that retails a product, but also looking at the consumption side, that you have sort of a capacity here to empower consumers to sort of basically interact with the retailers and the producers in a way that quite often is impossible to do these days.
Exactly. And also, so Carrefour, for example, the French supermarket, they have chicken. So you go into their supermarket and you pick up a packet of chicken and there's a sticker on it. And you can follow that chicken all the way back to, well, no, not making that joke about the hen and the egg, but all the way back to wherever it started from. And then you can know. And the thing there is that Carrefour is only one actor along the chain. So they can't impact the information there. But the veterinarian will put the information in whether or not they have given this bird antibiotics. And the smart sensors along the way have shown whether or not this chicken has been refrigerated along the way. And you'll find, and you'll know something from the slaughterhouse exactly when it was done, and so on and so on. So the thing is that it really levels the playing field for consumers, because Carrefour is not the proprietor of the information anymore.
Let's go back to one thing you said previously, Hannah. So you were talking basically about sort of the effect of the containerization on trade, reducing trade costs quite substantially. And if we want to get sort of a better feel for what possible improvements in trade and productivity that blockchain can generate, is sort of that example of the containerization of trade a good example? What I'm thinking about here is that containerization of international trade was something that spread extraordinarily rapidly in the second half of the 1960s and early 1970s. And it didn't just cut the headline cost of shipping, but it also locked products up in safer boxes, freeing trade from pilferage, damage, and theft. I read somewhere, I think it's from this fantastic book about the container, that New York dockers had previously joked that they could get paid sort of $20 a day plus all the scotch that you can carry home. But then the container came and sort of put an end to many of those fringe benefits and had a huge productivity shock on dock labor. From the same book, I picked up sort of that in 1965, sort of a unit of dock labor, they could handle around sort of 1.7 tons per hour. But after the container, it went up to 30 tons per hour. And that change just happened sort of in 10 years' time. Now, I mean, this is a big, big effect. I mean, a huge effect that would be difficult for anything to replicate that. But well, when we're talking about these scales, where do you think that blockchain technology stands? Sort of, are we talking about a scale which is marginal, or is it a scale that can be really big?
Yeah, no, I think I love that book, by the way, also, Frederick. I've read half of that same thing because I've been fascinated by the containerization too. And I think that blockchain has very many similarities. And what you don't know when you read that book, which I had to find out another way, was that the standardization of having containers that worked, that you could just get off the train tracks and into the ships, right? It was such a revolutionary idea, and it saved so much, and the productivity shocks were huge. But it didn't start out that way, because in the beginning, there were very many standards. And so people adhered to the idea of the container, but to get the actual effects of it, you had to make sure that the standards were the same, so that you didn't have to have a certain train coming into a certain ship and so on. And for that, I think there are many similarities with blockchain. So for now, there are many different initiatives working on incorporating blockchain into the trade chain. But we need to work on the standards. We need to make sure that that ecosystem can go all the way from farm to fork. And so if we're thinking about it as the WTO trade facilitation agreement, which works on getting the goods through customs, getting the truck through customs, that's where they're working. But with blockchain, you can go all the way from farm to fork. But in order to do that, you have to make sure that these private sector initiatives can actually slot into all these other systems, right? So that you have these standards that can click into each other. And so for public policymakers, in order to get that to work, you need to really engage, because you need to understand that you'll have to have regulation, just like these train tracks. You will have to have regulation that work across sectors. So whatever's going on the train goes into the ship and so forth. But in order to have it to work in an international setting, you also have to have these regulations that work within one country or one market to fit into that of another country or market, right? So if you think again about the example of the avocado going from Mombasa to Rotterdam, it needs to go through all those regulations. And so to me, the impact of blockchain is huge. The potential is huge, but there's work to be done.
the ecosystem that you're talking about now and the regulations that are important, what type of regulations would that be?
Well, one thing that's very, I think, illustrated is, for example, we're talking about having electronic signatures working as a regulated document. We have that in theory, but we don't have it in practice. And so there are a lot of those going on. And here in Sweden, there are these examples of who owns land. Well, if you look at the regulation behind it, that needs to be on a piece of paper. So you can't do that electronically, for example. And then there are all these different initiatives from the private sector working with their own blockchain for looking at trade. And you need to make sure that those work together, that they can interact with each other. That doesn't seem in practice to be such a big problem as it used to be, if you think about, I mean, they've learned from their mistakes in trying to be proprietary for too long. So just 2 years ago, that was called the Holy Grail, to be able to find that out. But now the private sector understands that they need to do that. And a great example to work with that would be to work through the International Standards Organization, for example.
And where are these private sector initiatives taking place right now? Are we talking about, is it one firm? Are we talking about several firms that work together in trying to develop these standards or to find sort of an ecosystem where blockchain easily sort of can be deployed in order to accelerate transportation and reduce trade costs?
Yeah, there are a huge number of initiatives that are taking place in, if we think about it, is our trade world. So there's a lot going on with trade finance and trade financing, which is the difference between having trade finance as a money, and then in the second one, you have also insurance. So there are a lot of initiatives going on there. You have a lot in supply chains, and you have a lot in the shipping industry. IBM, for example, is leading this huge initiative together with Maersk to get blockchain on transportation in shipping. And what I find interesting there is that IBM, who have built their whole firm, their whole, you know, capital on having proprietary information, have said, wait, this is moving way too fast. There's no way we can handle this by ourselves. So they're working through something called Hyperledger, which is an open source organization for developing blockchain. And the interesting thing there is that all of these who work in their own worlds are then members of Hyperledger too. So there's a lot of cooperation going on.
Are there different parts of the world where the development is moving faster than elsewhere? I mean, sort of when we look at everything from how regulation is moving to standardization, trade facilitation work in order to get everyone to basically work on a similar standards. Is Europe ahead of other parts of the world?
In terms of blockchain, I mean, I'm talking general blockchain, not blockchain in trade, but blockchain, because blockchain can be used for anything, right? From voting to health information to anything you basically think about. But so there, the EU has taken an initiative in organizing. So they have this blockchain initiative where they organize all sorts of events and try to tie together all the initiatives that are going on so their firms can jump on board and share their projects that they're ongoing. So there, the EU has really stepped up their game and on from the public side. From what I hear and understand in these different public forums for these blockchain initiatives, Asia seems to be moving faster because the crazy thing, and I didn't know this until I started looking into it, is that harbors are still very much stuck in the paper world. I mean, we have all heard about digitalization, right? We have all seen things moving into computers and stuff, but still much of this is still on paper. And so they have been notoriously slow in that. And so maybe in Asia, it's faster because you don't have these ingrained systems that are harder to change.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all to hear that, actually. Anyway, finally, Hannah, I was thinking about trade policy and what that can do in order to help the process moving forward here. So you mentioned trade facilitation work taking place in the World Trade Organization. Are there other forums that can be important here in order to drive this development forward? I'm thinking especially sort of about countries that are negotiating free trade agreements with each other. Is there a sort of a blockchain mission here for free trade agreements and the negotiators handling them in the future?
I would like to turn that question around a little bit, because what I would like to do is I would like, you know, as an economist, everything is about incentives to me. And so I would like to say what blockchain can do for trade policy, and seeing that there's a lot it can do, and it dovetails very nicely with it. There are incentives for policymakers to move forward. So, for example, having blockchain, the way it works, it, as we talked about previously, it levels the playing fields for firms that want to distinguish themselves, or firms that want to make sure that everyone knows that they're playing nicely, or for SMEs who are struggling with these costs of trade. And it empowers consumers, you know, and it works well with the implementation of the newer types of FTAs, where, as Commissioner Malmstrom wrote in her Trade for All declaration, where things are about European values, and it's about making sure that people are held responsible to, or how the developing countries have access to the GSPs. But we really don't have much tools to make sure that the rules are followed. But here it's pretty obvious. And so while FTAs per se don't need to handle blockchain as a regulatory issue, it is very important that regulation discussions such as having electronic signatures working, that actually gets enforced and implemented as a part of the FTAs. Did that answer your question at all, do you think?
I think it did. And you answered many other questions as well. So thank you so much, Hannah, for a fascinating conversation.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. Great.